Matt Gaetz. You talk about a warrior, right? Ron, what do you think, huh? Matt Gaetz is a great man, a great gentleman, and what a future he has. I don't know if I'd swap it, but I think I might. Great chat. Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Thank you both for being here. Appreciate it.
So President Trump, when he was in Sanford recently with Matt Gaetz and Ron DeSantis, saying that maybe he wants to swap futures with Matt Gaetz. His future is so bright. Joining us now, Representative Matt Gaetz, Congressional District 1, Northwest Florida. Matt, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Andrew. I don't know quite what it means when a septuagenarian president offers to swap his future for yours, but it's kind by the president nonetheless.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting moment, too, but that's always what you get with the president, interesting moments. So watching the town hall last week with Joe Biden, the dueling town hall with President Trump, what did you think of the furious line of questioning that George Stephanopoulos pushed against former Vice President Biden regarding the Hunter Biden story and Twitter's reaction to it?
Yeah, there was not a whole lot of requirement for Joe Biden to answer for conduct, which now has been evidenced through documents and emails, but which he personally denied. It is a bit vindicating for me and for my colleagues in the Congress. You know, each and every time we say, you know, hey, look, the DNC, the Democrats, they're the ones colluding with Russians. Then we get called a bunch of tinfoil hat people, and then lo and behold, that's what the evidence shows. And then we say, look, the real corruption in the Ukraine existed between Hunter Biden, these corrupt business people, and then the Obama-Biden administration. And then we're told that that's, you know, remember when the media said that was all Russian-funded election interference? And now even the Biden campaign cannot dispute the authenticity of the records that show we were right. So the media wasn't too keen on picking up on those storylines, but I think the American people see what's going on. What I think was more disappointing, Andrew, is that in the Trump town hall, like, so much focus on, like, QAnon, white supremacy,
yeah,
you know, whether or not he had denounced it for the 74th time, but, like, not a single question about education, about, you know, innovation for the benefit of student learning, not a whole lot on the environment, like actually things that impact people's lives seem to get short shift for like the salacious clickbait.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I thought the topic selection was terrible. I personally didn't mind the high engagement argumentative style. I just wish that style would be consistent across all candidates and if Biden would get that same treatment. I thought it made for interesting stuff. It just was the wrong interesting stuff. I agree with you about that. The story with Biden and Twitter, it seems to me like the more significant, I mean, the issue about Hunter Biden and corruption and Burisma, that's a big story, but the handling of that story, the banning of accounts, the banning of the sharing, even on DM of this story by a reputable news organization, the New York Post, I mean, that is an enormous problem coming into an election, right?
Yeah, I mean, big tech wants to control what we see and how we feel so that they can control how we act and how we behave, and it's a deeply frightening thing. I believe that in the marketplace of ideas, we ought to be able to confront even stories that aren't true. Now, this story is true, but if someone were to take exception with its truth or falsity, the right answer isn't to ban it from our ocular view. The right answer is to present other evidence, provide context, engage in debate and discussion around the facts that unfolded during this period of time for our country. And I worry about these tech giants having the ability to be the judge, jury, and executioner on their own version of the truth. My concern is that Congress is totally bought off by big tech. I'll just be completely straight with our listeners. Congress will never take action against big tech because it is totally bought off. And that's why the appointments to the Federal Election Commission, the Federal Communication Commission, those entities that are a little more insulated from politics are so important because they could actually lead to some very meaningful reform.
Well, you've got, like, what, Jessica Hertz, who came over from Facebook to the Biden campaign. You've got one of the seniors from Twitter also is now working at a high level in his campaign. The question is, and, you know, Google is obviously heavily involved, but you're saying it's both sides. I mean, is there a realistic prospect of regulation in the future for these social media companies, or even, you know, like Google, which is not exactly a social media company, but a massive influential tech company, right?
Yeah, digital platform.
Right.
No, they're not going to be regulated because we've built a system in Washington where one senator, you know, can functionally stop legislative policy reform. And, I mean, they own all of them. I mean, look, Chuck Schumer's daughter works at Facebook. You know, they give hundreds of thousands of dollars to and through Chuck Schumer. Like, you think he's going to allow him to be regulated? Absolutely not. And then you've even got Republicans. I know she's not in Congress, but she's a leading Republican voice, like Nikki Haley, saying, well, we can't have regulation. That would be even worse than what we have now. And so I think that there are plenty of people willing to sell out to big tech in both political parties. You know, my belief is that the FCC should take action. Last week, we did see the chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, put out a statement that they're going to start requiring some transparency from big tech to show, you know, what algorithms they're using to suppress or enhance content. But, you know, look, we're teens of days away from the election. We are quite literally in the election right now, millions of people voting. And I think that they've definitely got their thumb on the scale, and we've got to deal with that as a society moving forward.
And it's one thing to have Chairman Pai, who's been very good at his job, in there under a Trump presidency, where obviously the president has great weight on social media. But if the election goes the other way, I mean, I start to think about, you know, who's going to have any idea with a new chairman, with different people in play, and, you know, who's going to have any idea whether you're getting shadow banned or not, or what content is being favored, because those algorithms are essential to the capability of a person to get their message out on a platform that is so different from the public square, so different from a newspaper or a radio station. But it is the modern version of that. But how do you make that fair?
The way you make it fair is that you bring antitrust actions or good old-fashioned fraud actions against these platforms that are in violation at times of their own terms of service when they suppress content and they don't provide any appeal or any basis. But there's no term of service for a digital platform that should ever be more important than the United States Constitution. And I think that the way people now are just increasingly engaging over digital media, you know, even this interview you and I are doing will be consumed in large part on podcast platforms and clips that we send out on social media. It's just literally integrated into everything, including terrestrial radio, and we can't give them the ability to shape the world around their views instead of providing the opportunity for everyone to engage in their views. And again, this isn't me saying that only my perspective should be shared. I'm quite comfortable in a marketplace of ideas where I'm confronted with facts and arguments that maybe aren't directly in line with my worldview, that then you have to sort of deal with in a civil society making decisions together.
Congressman Matt Gaetz, we keep hearing about stimulus, little skinny stimulus. You know, the Senate might take it up this week. Is it realistic to think that anything is going to happen on this even in the next couple of weeks before the election?
No, and that's very sad. I just spoke with White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows before this interview, and Nancy Pelosi has functionally shut down the ability to take votes on things that are widely popular. The Paycheck Protection Program, used by a lot of folks in our district, is out of money. And if there was a vote to just reauthorize it or not, that vote would pass. Nancy Pelosi won't allow us to take that vote. She also won't let us take a vote on individual stimulus, which I would support. Look, there are a lot of Americans whose jobs are still illegal through no fault of their own, and our government should be there to provide for them in this time of pandemic. But Nancy Pelosi won't let us take even a vote on whether or not to give American citizens and legal residents stimulus because she wants to require stimulus to illegal aliens who are in our country. And so, you know, those types of poison pills, the inability to just take votes, has us paralyzed. And we know what the reason is, Andrew. It's that even something that's bipartisan and popular become law now, it would make the president look good.
Right.
And Nancy Pelosi is willing to allow Americans to suffer to avoid giving Donald Trump a win, and that is not appropriate use of her power as speaker.
What do you think? People keep asking me what I think is going to happen in Florida and in the election in general for President Trump, and I keep telling them honestly that I have no earthly idea because I don't know. I basically don't trust any of the polling mechanisms because I got everything wrong in 2016. We know there's a heavy amount of I'm not going to vote for Trump, but then I do vote for Trump. You know, people how they respond to public inquiries versus how they actually behave. What do you think is going to happen in Florida?
So a quick look at the numbers. The polling is bad for the president, but like you said, that wasn't really an accurate indicator before. Also, Democrats have returned about 500,000 more ballots so far than Republicans. But when you look at who is returning those ballots, for Democrats, it's largely their reliable, high-propensity voters that have just shifted from Election Day voting or early voting to voting by the mail. That means Republicans have a lot more ducks on the pond that have to turn out during early voting and Election Day because Republican vote-by-mail numbers are substantially down. But let me give you this final bit of data. The last time Democrats won Florida, Barack Obama and the Democrats had more than 500,000 additional registered voters compared to Republicans in Florida. Since that time, that registration advantage has been cut to closer to about 150,000 more Democrats than Republicans, and it's because there's been so much red flight from the Northeast and the Midwest, from blue states into Florida. Florida's a lot redder now than it was 4 years ago when the president won it, and certainly a lot redder than when Barack Obama won the president last for Democrats.
Well, that is very encouraging news. It's also an encouraging contrast to what I often hear, which is the concern that people moving here bring their liberalism with them, and maybe that's not happening as much as we had feared, which is also good news. Matt Gaetz, he is our congressman, Northwest Florida District 1. Matt, as always, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate you. Talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.